Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators hosting the Chicago Blackhawks tonight. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Pre-game coverage starting right here on 102.5, The Game at 6 p.m. But we had a couple of all-timers in college football yesterday. Alabama, Michigan, Texas, Washington in the college football playoff semifinals. And joining us now to break all of it down is Mitch Light of The Athletic. Mitch, I want to get into your thoughts on the CFP, but first I want to touch on what we saw from the Vols yesterday. Shut out Iowa, that high-powered Iowa offense. But we got to see the first of Nico Amoliava as a starter at Tennessee. What did you make of Nico's start and kind of the subsequent praise that he's been getting after that bowl game?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like there. It was just the game was, I'm not going to say predictable because no one thought, you know, yeah, well, I guess you could think Tennessee was going to pitch a shutout against Iowa. But like that long drive where Iowa went down and the throw into double coverage, just like everything that Iowa does offensively looks so difficult. And you have to credit Tennessee, of course, for playing well defensively, but with all the issues they had in the secondary, you thought maybe Iowa could get some things done in the passing game. But it's just, and I've watched Iowa enough this year not to be shocked, but that was just brutal. But yeah, no, I was very impressed with Nico. I mean, obviously he's got a live arm, some made some really nice throws, some nice throws on the run. And I love a running quarterback. I just think in college football, it is very difficult to win unless you've just got an elite team and elite talent all the way around at every position with a guy who can't get out of the pocket and make plays. And it was just, you know, that's not going to be his primary method of moving the ball down the field, but I think that was encouraging to see. He's definitely a good athlete. So, yeah, I mean, it was a very good defense to go against. There's not much not to like there, but, you know, it was one game. It was a bowl game. Obviously, there's going to be bigger challenges next year, but I think just going into the offseason, you couldn't have asked for much more from a confidence standpoint. And just good vibes around the offense.
Good vibes going into 2024, I think, is totally fair. What Nico is going to be at Tennessee, I don't know, but I think you can at least feel encouraged. But I saw Joe Rexroad put out an article on The Athletic and basically said, you know, we're going to define the Josh Heupel era at Tennessee by the Nico Amoliava era at Tennessee. Do you agree with that?
I understand Joe's point. But I think in this day and age, things can change from a personnel standpoint so quickly that I don't necessarily think that's true. I mean, let's just say he struggles next year and then they go to the portal and they get the next Hendon Hooker. And then they have a guy who's just awesome and has 2 great years there. If this were 5-10 years ago and you really put a lot of stock in the guys you developed and you just swung and missed on a big quarterback recruit, and there's plenty of examples we can look at. Look at LSU for years before Joe Burrow. How many times did they miss on quarterback recruits that really hurt their offense? Other than that, you know, Zach Mettenberger year, they didn't get good quarterback for like a decade. They recruited good quarterbacks. Like if rewind 10 years at LSU, they could have fixed, plugged some holes there. The transfer portal. So I guess my point is, it makes perfect sense. If Nico hits, it's a great, you know, positive for Josh Heupel. But I think there's ways around it. For some reason, it doesn't work out.
Now, looking at this game, this national championship game, you know, Michigan's coming in, you know, with this vantage defensive front that looked all of what they've been hyped up to be the other last night. But then you have this Washington team who puts up points as fast as anybody, and Penix is looking all of like a top 5 pick than just about any quarterback out there. How do you see this game going from this standpoint? Because we've seen this before where you have this high-powered offense going against a staunch defense. We saw it in 11 with Oregon and Auburn. We saw it in 15 with Oregon and Ohio State, I believe. Do you think that Washington can continue to do what they have been doing throughout the season, and more importantly, what they were able to do to Texas? Because, yes, there's a high-powered offense, and we know it. We know Penix is great. But that front seven of Michigan is, I mean, they may be the best in the country.
I do, because I think Penix does such a good job of getting rid of the ball. Like, his sack numbers are absurd. Like, I think he leads the country in fewest sacks allowed. Texas is a very good defensive front, too. And, you know, Washington's offensive line won the Joe Moore Award for the best offensive line in the country. You know, who knows if they truly are the quote-unquote best. But they're obviously very good. Penix is just so smart in you know, he's not really a runner, but we see him slide. And he keeps his eyes upfield as he's getting, you know, eluding the pressure. And let's be honest, I mean, he's in his sixth year of college. He's good at certain things. Like, Jalen Milroe took a lot of sacks. Jalen Milroe was in his first year as a starter. I think that was the difference in the game. Alabama had so many negative plays because of the sacks. That's not going to happen to Washington, or I think it's not going to happen to Washington. And the other thing about this offense is they catch everything. I mean, we talk about, you know, these receivers. Part of being receivers, as you know, Derek, being great athletes, separation, running routes. But a lot of it's just catching the darn ball, and they catch the ball every time. I think they had one drop yesterday. And he can spread it around to so many different people. The tight ends are good, too. So I really think Washington has answers for just about everything a defense is going to throw at them. And I think one thing I'm fascinated to watch, slight tangent here going forward, Ryan Grubb is going to get a head coaching opportunity at some point, their offensive coordinator. You know, Nick Saban tried to hire him in the offseason, and Grubb decided to stay at Washington. Kellen DeBoer has already proven himself to be a good offensive coordinator. You know, he was at Indiana, Fresno State. I'm not saying this is all Ryan Grubb, but sometimes you see an assistant leave the head coach and the offense takes a step back. I'm interested 2-3 years down the road if Washington can keep this going after Ryan Grubb moves on. So just a little storyline there to watch. I think they're maybe the best offensive coordinator in the country.
Now, Mitch, do you think this Washington defense, that front seven, can not stop Corum? Because I think Corum, and I hate to say it, believe me, I hate it even coming out of my mouth. Corum's a really good back, strong, powerful back. He can make plays. He's a playmaker. With what Washington wasn't able to do against Texas, was able to run the football. Do you think they would be able to contain that Michigan run game?
That's going to be, I think, the storyline to watch there, because their defense has been fine. I'm looking right now in the Pac-12. They were right in the middle of the pack, 5.66 yards per play allowed. I know you talked about rushing, but the thing about their offense is they have elite players at pretty much every spot. They don't really have that on defense. They've got some good pass rushers. Trice is really good. We saw him have a big game yesterday. And we'll see what happens with the cornerback. I forgot his name, the Oklahoma State kid that got hurt on maybe the last play of the game or the second to last play of the game. So Michigan is going to run the ball. And that just, you know, football, when you can run, it opens things up. And if Michigan's able to run, and that's open some things up for J.J. McCarthy and the play action. You know, I love their tight end, Loveland. I think that's a way they can move the ball. But, you know, I think Washington's also going to score. So, sure, Michigan will move the ball, but I think Washington will have, you know, equal or greater success moving the ball. But that's definitely one of the things to watch in this game.
Now, before I pass it to Willie, and this is beside the this is off of the national championship game, what do you make of the – you know, because people are going to say, see what happened to Florida State? That's why they didn't allow them. That's why they chose to take Alabama over Florida State, because Florida State got dismantled in their bowl game. But do you make much of that? Because if you're not playing for a championship, that didn't look like the same Florida State team that we have watched throughout the year. And maybe it could have been just, hey, you know, we're not playing for anything. Guys are not playing. We don't have a starting quarterback, whatever. It could be that, or it could be that, you know, they made the right choice by not, putting Florida State in that fourth spot.
No, I don't put any stock in that game at all. I mean, you look at the opt-outs, so they've got injuries. They were obviously missing a quarterback, all of their elite players. And the one thing that separate, you know, Florida State was very good this year. Whether or not you think they should make it or not, they were very good, had a great team. But from a roster standpoint, they still don't have the overall, you know, 85-man depth that a Georgia has or Alabama has. Where, so, you know, I know Georgia had some opt-outs, not at the key positions, but if an Alabama or a Georgia have more opt-outs, they have more roster depth. Florida State's not really there yet from a roster depth. So not only are you missing top players, your twos and threes aren't as good as some of the other quote-unquote elite teams there. So I don't put any stock on that. If anything, I'm not saying this, but you could look at Alabama and say, wow, Milroe struggled. That Alabama offense wasn't great. Maybe, you know, maybe Florida State should have gone. So I think you can spin it. Basically, whatever side of the argument you're on, you can spin it that way. But I put absolutely no stock in that Florida State, Georgia game from, you know, did the committee do the right thing standpoint.
This is another one that is just completely hypothetical, but I thought about this as I was watching Alabama, and they really battled, and they did all of the things that allowed them to go from early in the season, a team that we thought may not be up to the standard that we've come to expect for Alabama, to a shot to get to the championship game. I mean, they're right there. They're one stop away, maybe, on a 4th-and-2 from winning that thing.
Sure.
But I still looked at them, and I didn't see the layers of talent that, say, a Georgia had. I would be really curious to have seen, and Georgia didn't earn it. But I would have liked to have seen how Georgia stacked up with Michigan, if I'm just sitting there as an SEC snob.
Sure, no doubt about it. But, I mean, what else are you going to say? Alabama beat Georgia 3 weeks ago or whatever it was, or a month ago. So there's really not much to say other than most people would agree with you that Georgia is a more talented team than Alabama this year, but Alabama won the game that mattered the most when those two teams played. I mean, to your first point, it's clear that this is not a vintage Alabama team. Nick Saban, you know, he said after the game, I've never been more proud of a team and all that, because he knows what he had in September and he knows how they finished. So I think he wasn't BSing us. He literally was, you know, probably surprised and proud of this team. We don't have much to complain about as football fans because we saw two great games. I thought going in, all the teams were evenly matched. I picked Alabama and Texas, but, you know, had no idea what was going to happen. Both games went down to the wire there. So it's not like we saw a blowout. Like, oh, man, I really wish we saw what Georgia could have done. Like, I think we got what we deserved as fans, and both games were great. Yes, Georgia's probably better, but they lost the game.
I don't know if anything came out today, but I was reading about Quinn Ewers as we were watching Arch Manning standing on the sideline.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ewers, he had a good game, not a great game. Obviously, Penix stole the show. He played lights out, just an amazing performance. But I noticed that Quinn Ewers has not committed to the draft, nor is he committed to coming back. And then you've got Arch Manning sitting there. You've already had one other quarterback hit the transfer portal from Texas. So this is the day and age we live in here. But what do we think is going to happen there at Texas for quarterbacks?
I think both quarterbacks will be back next year. I mean, Quinn Ewers has basically hinted that he's coming back. I saw, you know, a lot of the Texas media that I follow on Twitter said that if he sounded like a guy that's coming back. Arch has basically said he's coming back next year. So I think we will see both those guys at Texas. I'm signing day last year, whenever when Arch signed, I made a joke. I think it was on our podcast or something like that. I said, look, I can't wait to see Arch starting at Tulane in 2025 or something like that. You know, if it doesn't work out there, you know, going back home. But it's just kidding there. But Arch is clearly looks like a guy who's bought into Texas. Hey, Quinn Ewers has been hurt a lot in his career. So even if Ewers comes back, Arch will probably have his chance at some point. But good to see a guy who's shown some patience there. But I think Arch will be back.
You would admit, though, that's kind of going against the grain of what we see
sure.
a ton in this day and age. If he actually does come back and say, I'll try to win the job, I mean, that would be kind of refreshing in one way, but on the other hand, be like, nobody does that now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm thinking, well, it kind of just shows you that the family, they understand football and how it works. When he committed there, he knew the roster that had Quinn Ewers had already transferred from Ohio State, so I get it. But then as I'm saying that, I'm like, well, let's see. Peyton Manning won the job as a freshman. I don't remember Arch. I think I remember was it the Music City Bowl against West Virginia late in his freshman year he came on?
If yeah, I'm getting Eli, my years Eli up. Came in very late. They had, what was it, Romero Miller was the,
yeah,
the quarterback
yes.
for a long time. But they did use Eli in the Music City Bowl. Mm-hmm. And then I guess that was his freshman year. I'm assuming that.
Yeah, I think it was. So my point being, hey, the Mannings, they had, you know, one started, they basically started 3 full years plus parts of freshman year for both of them. But, you know, it is a family that gets it. They understand how the game works. And sure, Arch could transfer, but, like, why do you – things change, obviously. But, you know, why go to Texas if you're going to transfer right away because Quinn Ewers is coming back? Like, he could have found a situation that was more advantageous to early playing time. You know, he almost went to Georgia, too. You know, not sound like a recruit here, but there's going to be competition wherever he goes. Like, Arch isn't – if, let's say, transfer – you know, I guess you could find a destination where there's an opening, but like everywhere you go, every elite place is going to have more than one good quarterback.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it, Mitch, where, you know, I think because of the family dynamics that, you know, he chooses to stay and battle for the starting job. And even if he doesn't win it, you know, he stays to try to finish out his career, his college career at Texas, because I can't. You know, yeah, I can see him going other places, but, you know, listen, if you beat yours out, then you're the guy. If you don't beat him out, then that tells you you need some more developing. And I think, you know, the Mannings understand that, hey, listen, if you can't beat out this guy, maybe you do need to sit for a little while longer.
Yeah, and let's say he transferred. I'm just making this up. Let's say he looked at, okay, Milroy was good this year, but he wasn't consistently great, and then he transfers to Alabama. And then they got Julian Sain, the number one quarterback, coming in as a freshman next year. Like, again, we keep saying the same thing, but there's just – you're going to have to compete wherever you are. And Quinn Ewers has been hurt both years as a starter. My guess is, like, I don't know, over-under in games Arch starts next year, let's put it 3.5. Like, Arch will be starting games next year, I think, at some point.
Mitch Light is with us with The Athletic. Mitch, I gave – Nick Saban and Tommy Rees a lot of credit. I felt like once they figured out what Jalen Milroe was good at, it was a completely different team. They found what he was good at. I think Tommy Rees's play calling really highlighted what his strengths were for majority of the season. And then I look at yesterday, I'm watching that game, and I keep yelling at the TV, like, just run it with Milroe. He's not going to have any time to drop back. He's not going to have any time for his receivers to go out and actually go, you know, through their routes and for him to go through his progressions. They just kept trying to throw the football. And then the final play call at the end of the game, I'm thinking, game on the line, a trip to the national championship on the line, and that was the play call. What was kind of your evaluation of Tommy Rees, maybe as a whole this season, and also what you saw from him yesterday?
Yeah, I'm always very hesitant to criticize coordinators because there's just so much involved in with the game plan and what players are supposed to do and not. So, like, preface that with, you know, but I agree with you yesterday. Like, sometimes I feel like they get a little too smart. Like, well, we're running it. So now's a good time to pass because they're going to be. But, you know, also depends on, like, what Milroe sees at the line of scrimmage. A lot of plays have multiple options if, you know, there's eight in the box, all this stuff. So I get that. I would love to know, get some truth serum on the final play, because I'm sure you guys are on social media. You saw a lot of some quote-unquote smart football people looking at the wide version say, okay, well, here's what the play was supposed to be set up to do, but Milroe, the snap was low, so he kind of panicked and ran up the middle. And if they would have done this, it might have worked. But then you hear Saban in the post-conference, in the post-game press conference, he's got no reason to really lie. He basically said that, you know, they had a play that they liked. Michigan made an adjustment, called timeout. That Alabama had a play they liked, or Alabama called timeout, and they settled on that play, and that was, they thought they had the best chance. So, like, I don't know how many options there were off that play. But on the surface, yes, it got blown up right away. There wasn't good execution from the snap in the interior of the line, so it's easy to criticize now. I would just love to know what this play was actually supposed to do if that was it.
Yeah, I don't think there was a good snap all day long from Alabama center. It was constantly Jalen Milroe was picking the ball up off the ground. But last one from me, Mitch. Looking at the Michigan side of things, it's been really interesting to see the progression of the court of public opinion as far as Michigan is concerned. You know, a month ago, 2 months ago, we were talking about Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan program. They're cheaters. Now they find themselves in the national championship game. Has your perspective changed at all on Michigan and how good this team is, how good of a coach Jim Harbaugh is?
Well, I've been a big, aside from the fact that he's kind of a weirdo, I've been a huge Harbaugh, like, supporter and backer. Like, he's done a great job wherever he's been, starting at University of San Diego in the NFL. I know there's some kind of, took him a while to get the ball rolling at Michigan, but the guy's clearly a very good coach. And I'm kind of conflicted on this Michigan team. I've always, you know, sort of liked, no reason to, you know, growing up in New Jersey, there's a lot of Michigan people. I got a lot of friends who are Michigan grads and all that stuff. So I've always kind of liked them, but this whole the sign stealing thing and then the reaction of the fans, you know, whatever fan base thinks the world's out to get them, I always kind of go in the other way. It's like, relax, you know, there's no conspiracies, all this. So, like, I was rooting against Michigan yesterday just because I get kind of sick of them and the fans and all that stuff. You know, I didn't really care that much. I just wanted to see a good game. But I really appreciate, you know, I guess my point is, if all this wouldn't have happened, I would really appreciate this team and the way they play. I like J.J. McCarthy. I like the way they handle themselves, all that stuff. So I think it's a fun team. I think it's good for college football to see some of this new blood and prove that, although I'm the recruiting editor at The Athletic, and that's what I do, that you don't have to, like, sign four straight top two classes to win a national or compete for a national championship. So I think it's good for the sport. So kind of my long-winded answer of saying, sort of conflicted about this Michigan team. I appreciate them, but there's some things I don't like about them.
I'm conflicted with them too because
I hate them. There's no.
I want to give them respect.
I knew there was no conflict for D.
Yeah, there's no conflict.
Never has been. Never will be. Never will be. Mitch Light covers college football for The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate your time. A happy New Year. Thank you for joining us, and we'll chat next week.
All right, sounds good, guys. Take care.
All right, appreciate it. All right, coming up next, we'll react to what we just heard from Mitch Light, give our thoughts on what we saw in the bowl games yesterday, what we saw from Nico yesterday, and maybe kind of get a temperature check, a vibe check on the Tennessee fan base going into the 2024 season. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, for brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason at Teddy's Tavern this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. for our NFL pregame show. They'll break down the Titans' Week 18 matchup against the Jags and give you the latest updates before the game. Our NFL pregame show is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and Beast Unleashed. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, we're live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. The national championship is set, and I believe this is only the second time in the history of the college football playoff in which the SEC will not be represented in the national championship game, which is crazy because it just means more. But Washington and Michigan in the national championship, we were just kind of discussing this at the break. I picked Alabama to win. Mm-hmm. I picked Alabama to beat Michigan. I actually even bet on an alternate spread, Alabama by a touchdown, because I thought that Alabama was going to be able to roll past Michigan. I wasn't impressed by who Michigan had played or had beaten, and I thought that Alabama throughout the season has only gotten better. Nick Saban coaches some of his best games when everything is on the line. We saw that in the SEC championship game against Georgia. Michigan made some mistakes. Mm-hmm. Michigan muffed the punt, handed Alabama great field position that they were able to capitalize off of. That was a 7-point mistake from Michigan. They missed the extra point, the weird snap on the extra point. They missed a long field goal, and they still found a way to beat Alabama. And really, for the most part, I thought Michigan was the better team for a majority of the game. It seemed like Alabama had no answers for Michigan's defense, which is so uncharacteristic for a Nick Saban-coached Alabama team.
That's because, I mean, this is a good team, but it's not a team that Nick Saban and that university is accustomed to having. Mm-hmm. They're used to having much better, like, first-rounders at just about every position. And right now, the offensive line is young. They got a left tackle, a true freshman left tackle, that, you know, he had a day yesterday. He got worked. But you figure the young guy's going to get better. And I guarantee you he's going to end up being a first-round pick.
Probably
a top-10 pick.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. But I think both teams made enough mistakes to keep the game the way it was. Michigan had their mistakes. Alabama had their mistakes. What I didn't understand, and I mentioned this off the air to you and Willie, it's there were certain situations where, you know, because in games like this, every inch means something. Like you can't afford to not try to get that extra inch in a game like this. If this is a regular season game, then yes. Or just a regular bowl game, yes.
Yeah.
Go down and save your body. But there are two situations where, you know, Jalen Milroe went down when he had an opportunity to get a first down and extend a drive. He slid instead of going, you know, head first. And I get it, injuries and everything else. But in this situation, like, you're going to get hit. I get that.
And it's also kind of his reputation. He's a bruising
exactly.
runner.
So why not try to go in there, dive in there to get the first down, as opposed to sliding? Because what you don't realize, well, maybe he does, that the point where in which you start the slide, that's where the ball is placed. It's not placed where you end up or where your butt touches. Yep. The minute you start that slide, that's where the refs are supposed to put the ball. And on both occasions, and it might have been more, but those two were just obvious. Like, I think even the announcer said something, especially on the first one. I'm like, he had an opportunity to go in there and get the first down, but he chose to slide. And now it's three and out, and now you're punting the ball back to Michigan. That's what I didn't understand. Like, do you know what you're playing for, Jalen Milroe? Do you know the significance of this game that you're playing in, that every inch matters, and y'all are not good enough to not try to get that inch? Years prior, 3-4 years ago, yeah, go down. I can just turn around and give to one of my big backs, and my offensive line is probably the best in college football. We're going to get it.
They don't have that.
But they don't have that right now. Every inch matters. And it just seemed like at certain situations in the game where, you know, whether it be miscommunication on the defense, not, you know, accounting for Corum coming out of the backfield, when you knew that, listen, y'all playing man-to-man, y'all got to communicate. They didn't communicate. Those are the things that were just uncommon of a Nick Saban coach team.
Under the category of little things, uh-huh, as well, I was wondering, in the overtime, they get down and it's fourth and goal on the whatever it was, three, for the last play. The play before, he throws a really nice dart right to Burton, the good wide receiver that they have, their best guy. And it was interesting because he cramps up. He's fighting to try to push across. Mm-hmm. And he goes down awkwardly, he tries to get up, and all of a sudden, he's cramped up.
Yeah.
He got twisted around. But then there was, what was interesting to me is, it's a chaotic time, but it gave them a lot of time to think about whatever they wanted to run on the last play. And then it became a lot of mind games. What are we running? What are they going to, are they calling timeout? But they never got Burton back on the field. I wondered if he got hurt at the end of the game. Could they get enough fluids in him? But that was tough. That was a tough break. Mm-hmm. To not have him, because that's their best threat if they were going to throw it. Mm-hmm. So that influenced what they ran, right? Or just exactly, up the gut kind of thing.
And how much did the bad snap influence it?
Yes.
How much did they have a designed play and then the bad snap? Because Jalen Miller was picking the ball up off the ground. Mm-hmm. How much did he kind of panic a little bit and think, well, I know I don't have the time to be able to go through my progressions or for my guys to get open, because I just have to pick up the ball and run.
Yeah, but there was just no daylight at all by the time he started forward. The offensive lineman got blown back by the defensive end, and he got clipped by his own guy before he even hit the hole. But then you looked from the end zone, it didn't look like he even had a hole, even if that didn't happen. Like, I had a hard time seeing how he was going to get into the end zone there.
Well, I just think it was, you know, it was panic by the center, because he knows that rush is coming right in his face. There's panic by the center. And then the ball's low, there's panic by the quarterback. So it's sort of like this chain reaction. One guy panics, causes the other guy to panic. And all of a sudden, the play that you drew up after a timeout, not drew up, but basically, you know, hey, listen, this is the play we want to run. You know, you went from that to, you know, everything just getting, you know, wiped out because of the center quarterback sort of exchange. One guy, you know, panic, which caused another guy to panic, which caused the play not to work, you know, to me. So, I mean, and listen, I know Michigan fans are probably listening. Oh, no, Michigan played, they played the game they needed to play to win the football game. They showed that they were the better team. It's hard for me to say that, but they showed that they were the better team. Now, I hope they get their ass kicked by Washington. I do hope that, okay? But they were the better team last night against Alabama. I don't prescribe to the whole, you know, Nick Saban being out coach. I don't think that happened. I just think Michigan had the better players. Mm-hmm. They had the better players, and Alabama had to play a perfect game to me in order to win. And neither team played a perfect game, but the better team ended up winning.
I thought when Michigan was down and had to score a touchdown, that's where I really thought Alabama was going to get the job done. Mm-hmm. I thought that they were going to get the one stop. They needed one stop, keep them out of the end zone. And when you have that, you feel like you like your chances, especially against the quarterback. That's the one thing about Michigan. Like, that kid is a battler. He's got the right ingredient, mm-hmm. right? He doesn't panic or anything like that. But he's not
McCarthy.
He's not a great. He's not Penix. You know, he's not anybody like. You know, he's.
And he's so I thought right you for could, that system.
Right, right. He's the right guy for the right team. But I thought that was their chance. Mm-hmm. Right, and then the fourth and two again. Those little things. Guy slips out of the backfield uncovered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you gave him an easy one there. Like where everybody's going, this is it. It's like match point. You get this. It's over. You got it. And you got it easy. That's
it
not
was it. Too easy.
Nick Saban's got to be saying, man, we let him off the hook.
Exactly.
Let him off the hook on that one.
And I would be lying if I said I wasn't disappointed that Michigan won that football game. And it's not because I'm cut from the same cloth as you. I'm no Michigan State fan. And it's not because, you know, I'm an SEC person and I wanted to see the SEC represented in the national championship. I just have a hard time seeing teams that cheat get rewarded for it.
I agree. That was the discussion in the group of people that watched at our house last night. We were debating because we were talking about the different. There are in my book, some people will say cheating is cheating. Everybody cheats.
Yeah,
right. Which that was one side of the argument, which is true. But to me, there are different types of cheating. I'm not supposed to know what play you're running.
Exactly. Absolutely.
And even though Michigan didn't know every play that everybody was running. Michigan tried to learn every play that everybody was running, and they went to great lengths knowing what the rules are, and they did it anyway. So I was definitely rooting against Michigan for that reason and that reason only.
And the extent to which Michigan cheated. I mean, everyone's going to try and pick up on signals and patterns whenever they're watching the tape because that's just a competitive advantage. Mm-hmm. Not every team is dressing up an assistant in opposing team's gear and throwing them on the other sideline and buying them tickets to the Wisconsin-Ohio State game. Not every team is doing that. But I'm conflicted because, I mean, I think that if Michigan wins this national championship, I at least, and I think a good portion of the college football fandom, will view it kind of with an asterisk of, oh, yeah, Michigan won, but they got caught for cheating that season. But that locker room, everything was going wrong on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Your coach was suspended for how many games? Eight games of the season? Everyone wants to see you fail. Mm-hmm. Everyone is calling you cheaters. All of the rhetoric surrounding the Michigan football program on the outside was negative. Mm-hmm. And that team stayed motivated. And look, they had an easy schedule. Yeah, I get that. But they don't control that schedule. And they just went out and beat an Alabama team that has been one of the best teams in the country all season long. So the locker room has stayed motivated. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't think that they're cheating anymore. And if they are, then every single coach that has played Michigan, shame on them for not changing their signals. I don't think that they're cheating anymore. I think that they're actually a very good team. I think Blake Corum is probably the best running back in college football. Michigan's defense proved to me yesterday that they are, in fact, very much so legit. I wasn't quite sure. I wasn't quite sold on them considering the offenses that they went up against in the Big Ten. But it's a good team, and it's a team that has stayed motivated and stayed focused when everything else was going wrong. It pains me to not give that locker room the benefit of the doubt, but I just can't.
Yeah, well, Minnesota's running back would beg to differ that Corum is the best back in the country. But I look at this game, and whether you believe Michigan cheated or not, I heard it this morning.
They did.
You know. Yeah, Stephen A. saying, well, you know, they didn't find anything. Well, listen, they didn't find anything because it was sort of this backroom deal. Listen, you take the suspension, we'll stop investigating. That's what they said. We will stop. It's not like, okay, you take the suspension and we're going to continue to investigate. The minute you said, that's why Harbaugh just left it alone. Okay, I will take the 3 or 4 game suspension. The only hard game we got is Michigan. And the only hard game we got is Ohio State. Prior to our national championship run, the only game that could be a hurdle for us is the Ohio State game. That was a tough game. And who's to say that, you know, they hadn't already had the signals for Ohio State, you know, everything. But put that aside. You know, when you look at this game, you say, well, there was nothing that they found out. Well, yeah, when they closed the investigation and not tell anybody what they found, there was nothing to be found.
Michigan essentially admitted blame.
Exactly.
Like, okay, fine, we did it.
Please don't put nothing else out. Please don't investigate it more because you're going to find a lot more. So you know what we'll do? We'll stop fighting. Harbaugh, be quiet. Take the 3 or 4 game suspension, and you'll be back in time for the national championship. Do that. But this narrative of, oh, they didn't find anything, they stopped. Yeah. Because he accepted the the punishment.
It was pretty documented.
Exactly.
Everybody in the league. Everybody
exactly.
in their league turned them in. That tells you a lot. So let me ask you guys this. Mm-hmm. I didn't see a lot of talk about that during the broadcast. I don't know what.
I'm sure they said stay away from that. Because you don't want that to be the storyline as right. the game is going on. They mentioned it a couple of times here and there.
It's kind of an old story, but you have a new audience coming in. So that's always a debate on how do you handle that at the production meetings. Okay, what are we? Because I'm sure in the pregame show, I didn't watch the whole pregame show. I don't know what they said or didn't say
on
that.
They did bring it up.
I would have guessed they did. Mm-hmm. But Kirk Herbstreit, Chris, do you bring it up much during the game? You probably can't as the announced team. I'm curious, now that they've made the final and it's just them, and they've got this, but there's not other bowl games. It's not the holidays. Will that be a big story this week? Will that whole do they deserve to be there because of this come back up? I'm curious about that.
I don't think that it will. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily bother me because when Michigan was consistently a top two, top three team throughout the course of a month, 2 months of the college football playoff selection committee, the selection committee said, look, we are not a judiciary committee. Mm-hmm. It is not our job to decide whether you are guilty or not. Mm-hmm. That's the NCAA's job. And I agreed with that the college football playoff, they are there to say, okay, which team is most worthy of being a top four team in the country? And Michigan was undefeated. Mm-hmm. Michigan won every game in their schedule. So why shouldn't they be a top four team in the country? It will be a topic of conversation, I think, amongst college football fans. But as far as a topic of conversation on the broadcast, I really don't expect it to be too big of a topic of a conversation. Also, because I think we're far enough removed from it.
Yeah, I think during the broadcast, I would be surprised if it comes back up.
Yeah.
I'm wondering about the days leading up to it. Mm-hmm. Does it come back up in talk shows and... You know, this is interesting. The ESPN is the partner, right? Do they go back through this a lot on their shows? They certainly have plenty of airtime to discuss any number, like McAfee's show and stuff like that. It's kind of you would think like when a team makes the Super Bowl, some of the dirty laundry or whatever controversy happened gets brought back up. So I'm just curious about that part of it. The actual night of the broadcast, I wouldn't expect there to be any different than we saw yesterday.
But if Michigan does win, I expect that to be the topic of conversation.
Yeah. Right.
Is this how legit? Do we view this national championship?
Yes.
How do we view this Michigan team?
It's like Barry Bonds broke the home run record, right? But then it's up to everybody else after that to decide how you feel about that in history.
But isn't this the crazy thing? Like, just think about this right quick. That you can retroactively pull away victories because a guy, quote unquote, took financial benefits. Mm-hmm. So you can go back and remove their Heisman,
Reggie Bush,
all this other stuff. But when there's clear-cut cheating, like clear-cut cheating, you see it. Everybody see it. You say, "No, we're not gonna take their victories away. We're just going to let it be. We'll suspend the coach. We'll let it be, and then let his team play."
They could retroactively vacate the national championship.
They're not going to retroactively vacate because they stopped investigating it. It's done now.
Well, the Big Ten stopped investigating it.
No, I think the NCAA, they're still investigating it?
Yeah, okay. As far as I know. So the NCAA,
I thought the NCAA stopped too.
That's a whole other thing, though. Yeah. Even if they did, let's say in another couple years, say, well, you know, we're going to vacate the title. What? Does that really do it?
It doesn't do anything. It does not do anything.
Especially when you had – sometimes that's the only choice they have because they didn't have the goods. I felt like they had the goods.
They had the goods.
During the season. The Big Ten should have said you can't play in the Big Ten title game. That's just my opinion. I know Michigan fans will go crazy and everything like that. But that's, to me, that was their opportunity to say this does not happen. You do not – That was ethically the wrong thing to do.
But the Big Ten didn't want to do that.
Disregarded the rules.
But
they didn't
why
want to
would
do
you
it.
Care about ethics when you could have a team that makes the college football
exactly.
playoff?
Exactly. Absolutely. You don't care about ethics. Because if Michigan beats Ohio State, now you get nobody in.
Yeah, true.
And now the Big Ten's laughing to the bank because they've got a Big Ten on Big Ten national championship coming up.
Yeah.
because that's kind of how I viewed it.
Yeah, Big Ten on Big Ten. Washington will be in the Big Ten.
With two SEC teams and two Big Ten teams in the college football playoff. All right, we'll continue the conversation coming up next. Get back into your phones. Caroline Willie, D. Mays. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan Thursday night for Vanderbilt women's basketball. The Commodores will be on the road taking on Mississippi State. Tip-off is at 6:30 p.m. and pregame begins at 6:15 p.m. Coverage is also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Caroline Willie, D. Mays. Tune in to 93.3 Classic Hits tomorrow for MTSU men's basketball. The Blue Raiders are at home facing Reinhardt with pregame beginning at 6 p.m. and tip-off at 6:30 p.m. Coverage also available on the 93.3 Classic app and at 93.3classichits.com. We're live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena because the Predators are in action tonight hosting the Chicago Blackhawks. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Pregame coverage starts here at 6 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. A couple of really critical in-conference games coming up over the next few days. Chicago tonight, Calgary on Thursday. Important points that the Preds need to pick up if we're looking at a big playoff picture here. But, Willie, one thing that we were discussing at the break has been Juuse Saros. 1-3-1 in his last five. You know, held on against the Capitals over the weekend. But, like we were talking about, as we were discussing, the nightmare at the end of the Dallas Stars game, not able to hold on to that one. What's the concern level of Juuse Saros, and how much can this team pick up the slack in front of him?
Well, I would say, if you evaluate what they've done, and this is game number 38 for them, and if you look at the analytics as a whole for their goaltending, and Askarov gave him a good lift. That was a great moment for him, great moment for the team, storybook kind of thing to win the shootout, and he stops two Russian Hall of Fame kind of guys to do it. That was really cool.
Yeah.
But let's just take, because Saros is in a slump right now. There's no doubt about it. Or maybe you would call it a mini slump. But he's been kind of streaky. He lost five in a row, and we had this conversation that dropped their record as a team to 5-10. You're like, what's going on with Saros? Then he turns around and wins 10 out of 11, and he looks very much like the goalie that, to me, should have been a Vezina finalist last year and got screwed.
Yeah.
And you thought, okay, well, here he goes. And now we've got this mini slump, 1-3-1. So you put it all together. If you look at the numbers of all three goalies, they've had – basically average goaltending over 38 games. And on one hand, you're saying, well, what's wrong? But on the other hand, you're saying, well, they're getting average goaltending, and yet they're still in the wild card position. So my money is on they're going to get much better goaltending in the second half of the season, because long term, I believe that Saros over time is going to get there. But this is an important start for him tonight, because – he's given up five goals in each of the last two games. The one before that was the game where he's 13 seconds away from a gem and a great performance to beat the Stars, but they get him on the last two shots, and that's a loss. So just trying to get back on the right foot will be important for him, because, as you mentioned, they play eight of the next nine against the West. So this is a big week. Andrew Burnett is saying, he said this, you know, really unprompted today, we've got to be more consistent at home. He says, we've got to make this a place where people don't want to come in. They know that when they come in here, they're going to face a buzzsaw. It's been a little up and down at home,
they
especially of late.
They have been significantly better on the road.
Lately they have. Yeah, so they're 8-7 in the last 15 at home, 7-1-1 in the last nine road games. So it's just one of those ebb and flow kind of things, but there's no reason that they can't get going on home ice again. And then they've got two ones this week. Tonight, against a Chicago team that's been, if they're off at all, they have a hard time staying in games. But in the last 10 games, they've won only two. But they beat Winnipeg, and they beat Colorado. So it's one of those things in this league. It's hard to tell what you're going to get night in and night out. So if you're not ready to play, the two games against the Blackhawks, the Predators have won, but it hasn't been easy either time. So that this will be an important game to set the tone. And then you got a big one against the Flames on Thursday night, a team that's on that bubble, like a lot of teams in the West, for those wild card spots.
If you look at the patterns, the ebbs and the flows of this Predators team, it aligns with the ebbs and the flows of Juuse Saros' peaks and valleys. That as Juuse Saros is playing lights out, this team wins games. It's not the craziest formula. So in these next few incredibly critical games, if you want to talk about the playoffs, which I think that this team is in a position. We can talk about the playoffs. You're going to need to win some of these games coming up.
Yeah, and they'll need to get good goaltending as a whole. And the other part of it, I think, that is becoming a theme, if you're looking at what's happened in the first 38 games, you've got a first line that's having a tremendous year with Forsberg, O'Reilly, Nyquist. Those guys have been very consistent, very relied upon. The nucleus of young players has been kind of up and down. If they can get those guys going to another level, that really might be the difference in making the playoffs or not making the playoffs. And
consistency.
Yeah. Evangelista got a big goal for him the other day. That's a good sign. Novak's starting to play better, but a lot of other guys, it's been kind of a hit or miss. Let's see what you get from them.
That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman and Company is up next.
Be love, love on your people. Happy New Year and peace.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.